Hi, and welcome to thedigitaltrekker.com. I'm Matt Brandon, and this is Depth of Field. Depth of Field gives you, the listener, a chance to look behind the scenes at the lives of working photographers. Over this series, we hope to give you a glimpse as to what it takes to succeed in the world of photography. Welcome to part two of my two-part interview with Nevada Weir. Today, Nevada tells us about her use of wide-angle lenses, getting in close for that shot. She also talks about her new exhibit coming up, all right here on Depth of Field. How much luck plays in what you're doing?
Well, luck plays into everything in the world. But, you know, like I said before, I've seen luck stare people in the face. I've actually watched it because I've been around other photographers teaching workshops and tours. I've seen luck staring people in the face, and it doesn't mean people see it. So I don't... I think luck is always there, you know, so I don't kind of buy into that lucky thing, because I think it's you have the technical knowledge. And, you know, one of the basic difference between an amateur and a pro is that, you know, I'm photographing more. It comes back to, again, that whole clicking the frame that we started out with,
right?
Because it does take a whole lot of frames to click and to understand what it is that, first of all, to know how to use this beast that's in your hand. And they are beasts, you know, the lenses and the flashes and the cameras.
Yeah,
they're very wild and woolly and beastly. But, you know, that's kind of the lesser thing to know how to do. But unless you know how to use that technology, like any technology, whether it's a tennis racket to a computer to a camera, you know, you have to be able to learn how to use that with fluidity so that you can then, you know, let go in the moment when you're actually trying to, as you say, find the luck. Mm-hmm. And the luck is always there. I the luck to me is, you know, I've said before, and I'll say it again, there's no such thing as a boring subject. Mm-hmm. There's just very boring ways of looking at things. So in my little living room that I'm lying in right now, I should be able to pick up a camera, and I should is the key word, mm-hmm. be able to pick up the camera and make brilliant images. It's not about luck.
Mm. Yeah, and I think you touched on something. Yeah, I don't know if you've seen all the different kinds of books that have Zen in the title, you know.
I started in that world. Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance is one of the first.
Exactly right. And I guess the point there is a Zen quality, if you will, that has the sense of you learn something, like the I once read about the archer, you know, and he learns the skill of archery. He learns the mechanics of archery until at one point his archery becomes second nature, and then the bow and the arrow just become an extension of him in a sense. And it becomes this Zen kind of a thing where you don't think about it. You know what it's going to take to do it. And I think there is some of that involved in good photography, is the more and more you shoot, you know what, you know, 1.2 is going to give you. You know how far back to stand. You know what that instrument in your hand can do, and then you become a lot more familiar. When you become a lot more familiar with it, it becomes a lot more natural, and then those images start appearing a lot less lucky and a lot more intentional.
Exactly, and that's why I would encourage avid, emerging, whatever the word you want to use, mm-hmm. I would encourage, you know, photographers to back off on the equipment and to go back to one lens, because it you know, very much so, Matt, I couldn't agree with you more, because it really is about the intent, and it's not about clicking a whole bunch of frames and hoping something happens. You know, you have to photograph with a certain amount of, I don't pre-visualize, but with intent and awareness, and encumbering yourself with all this technical things, unless you're ready for it, I think is a waste of creative energy, because isn't that why we're out there photographing, mm-hmm. especially travel photographers? Because for us, we have other problems, and they're not necessarily problems, but other concerns, because the social concerns,
right.
You know, we haven't even touched on what it means, you know, when you're out there photographing and using nonverbal communication and worlds that you might not be comfortable. And so there's, and that could happen. I don't care if you step outside your doorway and go to a new city in America. It's not just about being somewhere in a foreign country. But, you know, I just think the technical, you should start small and work up to it, because you never want to have the technical getting in the way of feeling happy or creative or excited about photographing. And fumbling is not a good way to get a good image.
Right, right. Well, talking about limiting your gear, what does your kit look like? I've looked on your website. You seem to have a lot of, you like to shoot wide.
I know here I've talked about going simple, and I have, you know, I have to be able to carry everything, but it is like a black hole when I start pulling out, things. It's like, how could you fit that lens in there? How could you do that? I'm like, I carry everything from a 15 millimeter to a 400 and beyond. So it is like this little black hole, this camera bag of mine.
How's your back doing?
Yeah, it's not good. Yeah. Not good. I'm bent. I'm crooked and bent. But that's just sort of, you know, they're always byproducts of it. But, you know, you're right. There are lenses. One of the things that I love, like I love Lightroom. Like you can sit there and you could actually filter down. Like if I look at all my best images and you say, okay, what lens were they shot with? Of course, with film, they can't tell you that. But I bet the majority of them are from 20 to 35 millimeter, because again, I think it really forces me to be creative and certainly cross-culturally in touch, and to definitely to see differently, because with a wide angle lens, you can't just photograph what you see. You really do have to use the properties of a wide angle lens to your benefit. Otherwise they will create problems. So I do like the wide angle lens. I love 20 to 24 millimeter, the best, especially for photographing
people. It puts
you
in the picture almost, doesn't it? I mean, you have to really
enter. What do you mean almost? Well, you're like sitting in somebody's lap if you're photographing. You're right. Like, what do you mean almost? You can't use it effectively unless you are utterly, completely inside of a comfort realm that most Westerners are not used to. You're living in Malaysia. You know what I mean.
Yeah. No, that's right. And that's actually one of the things that I really like about shooting with a wide angle is I feel like I'm entering into the moment with the people there, and that's always been the challenge, though, is balancing out being a fly on the wall versus being a part of what's happening and being respectful and everything else. You know, it all kind of comes together. How do you do that?
Well, you know, with a wide angle lens, you can't just occasionally it happens, but you usually can't just parachute in and expect to photograph the same way you can with a long lens or a mid-range lens. But those images are going to all kind of look the same, kind of the straight-on shots. And so I'm always looking for something with a little more texture and layer and depth. And a wide angle lens is what gives that to me. So you're right. You can't just sort of come in, quickly take the snap and walk out, because I'm in somebody's space, so they have to be willing. So it oftentimes takes more time. It means that I have to hang out longer. They're not going to, you know, forget that I'm there, but they may just not be paying attention to me that much. And I can then start photographing more images about the other person. Of course I'm there, because unless they're willing to let me into this world, there's no way I can photograph with a wide angle lens. Of course, the great social documentary photographers, and you look at the Mary Ellen Marks and the people that did all the great stories for Life magazine, and even nowadays in the wonderful online social magazines that work with wide angle lenses, they know their subjects. They've spent time. And as travel photographers, we can't expect there to be a great image every single minute. I mean, I just, I have to, you know, one image a day, that's all I want. And if that means sitting down with somebody, even if it's just a coffee shop owner or somebody in a rice field, if I can, I'm going to spend time, because as a travel photographer, as you know, I'm there for the image, but I primarily am a photographer for the travel experiences. I mean, I wouldn't have chosen this field because the money's not there for it. It's for me, it's the whole experience of travel and meeting people. It's the whole thing. Yeah, I mean, we've heard that a million times. So for me, with the wide angle lens, that kind of reinforces that philosophy, because you can't get the image unless you spend time with people.
Let's balance out, not balance, but let's bounce off of that and go to this the idea of travel. How do you prepare for a trip? How do you maybe that's too much to talk about, but you've got an assignment, you're going off to Tibet. Are you have a standard kind of way that you pack for cold climates, warm climates? Do you have certain things you keep aside, you're gonna get there? I mean, what's you've obviously developed some sort of a system through the years, haven't you?
I'm a professional packer. Yes. I've been doing this for what, 25 plus years, Matt, and I started out as an outdoor instructor, and I was a mountain guide, and I was a guide on the Colorado River. So the outdoors is in my background, and I'm used to packing. As being minimalistic as a photographer, I don't know. I don't think that's so easy. You don't just throw a pack on your back and run away unless you're willing to work with just one lens. So yes, I certainly. I saw you had a packing list recently on your blog. You're going to Ladakh. I mean, I have a in my mind kind of what I take for certain situations, and clothes is the least important part about it. I pack my camera gear first, and this is where I do think the digital is a lot more involved in film, where before I would just think about how do I protect my film. Now you've got to think about every little. You lose one lo a wire in your whole system for digital, and you've lost the whole thing. I mean, just us fumbling to try to get a little Skype phone call here. There's a lot more that can go wrong with digital than there ever was with film cameras. Very little could go wrong unless you broke your lens or, lost some film. But I have to say, I never did any of that.
I remember when all this started. I mean, I remember when years ago I was shooting a what was it, an OM-1, and it was completely manual. Everything about it was just gears, and this thing, it was wonderful because it was like this tank. It was small, but it's sturdy. But then I started shooting like an AE-1, and it started getting a lot more electronic, and then all of a sudden I was out in the field shooting and the battery goes dead, and then I have no meter and the shutter won't click, and it was all, we get more and more dependent on technology, and there's a lot more things that can go wrong.
A lot more. In fact, I have not let go of my film cameras yet. I haven't used them in a while, but like for example, I did a geographic expedition down the length of the Blue Nile. That was 2 months. There's no way I would go on an expedition like without a film camera and film backup, because it's just there's too much that can go wrong for extended periods of time without electricity. Granted, the world is becoming more and more wired, but I go to places very, very often where I don't have electricity. So if I'm going someplace for at least a week without electricity, I'm always taking a film camera with film backup. And I've had to use it once in a while. And it's very reassuring to have it, because one wire, that's it. One plug, and taking backups, it was one thing to take a backup lens. Now I take
Backup
the
drives.
computer backup, so I have the computer, and then I have my LaCie rugged drives, which are really rugged. But then what if I lose a power cord, which I did once to my computer, because then I use the hyper drives, but you got to have those, and then you have the batteries for that, and then you've got to have the battery packs for this. And so,
It's
and you can't.
insane.
Let's say, and of course, and then of course, you can't carry all the stuff on the plane like you used to. So it does kind of make one laugh and cry at the same time, doesn't it? Doesn't it? But it has a digital has brought a lot of people back to photography, and I really applaud that. And it's brought creativity back to photography in a way that was slowly going downhill for film cameras. So despite the I think problems for the traveler who likes to go off the grid, and I, of course, always encourage that. That's a whole nother a whole nother set of worries. But if you're not off the grid, digital is just so exciting. And the biggest thing for me was the fact where I would always be photographing, and my nonverbal communication, the way I expressed myself, had to be so exact, because especially using wide angle, it looked like I was photographing someone's toenail, right? And they didn't realize I was getting three or five people in the frame. Now I can show them that picture. And that's it's just fantastic, where I have that extension of the nonverbal communication through the back of the camera, which I never had with film. And that is fantastic. I absolutely love it.
I mean, this is something that I've written about and others have written about, the idea of being able to finally give back in a sense. We're always taking as photographers. I mean, the very term, you take a picture. I mean, we're always taking, but now it's finally with digital, we've been able to, at the very least, to be able to turn around the camera and show on the screen the photo and to be able to give it back in that sense. And then one of the things that that I use are these little Pogo printers that it's a little USB printer. It's more gear, more thing to go wrong, but I can actually take a like a little almost like a Polaroid print and print it out right at that moment if I'm going to be there for a while, and I'll give the people a little photograph that I've taken, and it has made a huge difference in the way that I've been received and then received back in case I want to go back to that area. So
Well, true. I sure. Who wouldn't love something like that? But don't you think fundamentally it has to do with the one-to-one exchange? And
oh, it does.
I always felt that one of the working with wide angles and working in film is that I had to put myself out. I really had to convince, not convince, because you mentioned the word take. There's a lot of aggressive words in photography: take, shoot, get, and you can get lofty and talk about create or make an image, but that does color our language. And I was very aware of that early on. And so, and not having a way to show them the image, I had to show them myself in a way that I think is still very, very helpful with digital. But having this extension to be able to share, what my vision is with somebody, whether they can see it or not in that little LCD, because they are pretty small and very imperfect. But I do like having that extension, and I do like that idea of sharing. But you're right, these words in photography, they're quite aggressive.
Okay, so what's next for you? What do you got on the horizon?
Well, I'm right now this summer, I'm writing a book right now, and I'm working on a new exhibit that I have coming up next summer called Outer India. I'm spending quite a bit of time in India. I have spent a lot of time in Asia, although South America and Africa has been a stomping ground as well. But I'm working with a lot of the tribal areas in India, Northeast India. I'm going to Orissa in October, and of course working in Gujarat and certain areas like that. Is I mean, as you love India. How can you not love India? India's just fantastic, and just a wide a myriad of different types of people. But
So what's the
and I
theme on
just
this book? What are you working on?
the book the book is it's called A Nomadic Vision, and it's a lot of what we're talking about here, is that I'm writing about the amalgamation of my life as a travel and a photographer, because starting from my first expedition when I circumambulated Lake Titicaca in a reed boat in 1978. I mean, can you believe it? 3.5 months later. But it's, those sort of things, and the different expeditions I was on, and being in China when it first opened up in the early 80s, and my different pivotal assignments that I've had, and what that means to the future. So it's very personal. It's one that I really want to finish. It's a lot more writing than actually I
So
really want to
is this
do.
sort of a memoir? Is that what it is?
I guess so. Kind of a rambling memoir, so to speak. But yes, because there's certain things that I do want to write about, particularly for photographers. I did a book early on called Adventure Travel Photography, that talked about, how to photograph in these more remote places, and that was quite a while ago. I don't really want to do another how-to book, but I think there's lessons to be learned, as you are doing with your podcast, from talking about one's experiences and the evolution of yourself as a photographer, because photography is not easy, and no nobody gets popped out as a National Geographic photographer. It's just it doesn't work that way. And whether you stay in it professionally, because professionally means, you know, making money at it, or whether you stay in it as an avid photographer, kind of, isn't that what the original word amateur meant, the lover of photography? Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, it's really about loving photography. No matter which side of the fence you stay on, your love of photography has to hold yourself through it. And as a professional, it just is the added onus of making a living at it and, you know, keeping your love of photography alive. And I think that's been one of the biggest struggles of my life as a professional photographer, is keeping the love of photography alive. And that's, of course, digital and printmaking. Printmaking has brought that back to me, because the evolution of making a print is different than photographing a story or photographing, you know, for a blog or a single image. It's the whole different gestalt. I've gone back to the early Ansel Adams books to start thinking about what it means to have a tangible image on a piece of paper.
Where is this taking you?
It's taking me more to my personal projects. I mean, it's almost a full circle, where I started out in photography with my personal projects that I then tried to sell as assignments, that I then, you know, was fully into the assignment world, whether it was for Geographic or Geo or outside. And now I've kind of, you know, pushed myself out of that and back into my personal projects that, you know, whether they evolve as a book or whether they evolve as an exhibition, or as the myriad of possibilities of the online world, as we're all learning about, we'll see. And I think it is a wonderful, bright new frontier for people to be able to show their work. And there are venues more than there ever been before. But of course, it is harder to push people to those venues to see them.
What about mentoring? Are you doing any mentoring?
Of course. I mean, I learned so much from other photographers. I was rather appalled recently at a blog that I read talking about how you should keep everything into yourself and don't share things. I thought that was rather appalling.
I think because I saw the same blog, and I was also appalled by it, actually.
I was. Because, you know, I have been so lucky of I've always, you know, because I am self-taught and there weren't workshops available like there are right now, is I always would, you know, talk to the photographers that I could. And people were so generous to me. Liesl Dennis, a great travel photographer, was so generous, and people would talk to me. And I just think it's incredibly important. It's one of the reasons why I teach workshops. You think, well, you're getting paid for it. You're not getting paid that much. It's a way of giving back. And when I teach a workshop, I give everything I can to it. And the Santa Fe workshops has come up with a great program for mentoring too, where people can choose different photographers to mentor. And it's been absolutely fantastic. And then, of course, there's people around the world who I keep touch base with. I mean, I wish I have so many people emailing me all the time, and Facebook and everything. And I wish I could take everybody under my wing. But I have to say, you know, people come up and they're like, how do I become a professional photographer? And I'm like, can you just narrow your question down just a little bit? Because, you know, I just can't spit it out in a paragraph. So I think a lot of emerging photographers don't understand that it's, you know, mentoring has to come with a little bit of narrowing of their vision too. So I do love the open nature of the internet and Twitter and Facebook and all of that. But I think there does come a time in every professional photographer's life where you have to go, look, I have to work now. I have to do my own stuff. But certainly reaching out has always been a part of it, because, you know, coming back to that taking, if you do think of it, which I don't, in terms of taking pictures, but if you do, you really better reevaluate that word, because it's really about sharing and sharing with other photographers and sharing with the people that you are photographing, even if it's just for a moment. I mean, for me, I'm not necessarily looking to photograph everybody who I think is interesting that I see. I'm looking for synchronicity. There's always somebody I jive with. There's always chemistry. And I'm just kind of, my antennas out and my feelers are out for where's the chemistry. And then I'm like, wow, it's that person in that field. And you can't will somebody to fall in love with you. It's just there. It's part of the chemistry. And for me, photography is that indescribable chemistry of photographing people and then figuring out how to put it out in the world. That was a long answer, Matt. Sorry.
That's okay. Hey, listen, this has gone quite long, and I really, really am excited about the interview. I think our listeners are going to really enjoy this. You've given us a lot to think about, a lot of help, a lot of good tips, both from the more esoteric down to the very practical type stuff. And so I appreciate your time with us. If people want to go to your blog and your website and Twitter and any other way to get a hold of you, what are the links that they can do? You want to tell them?
Well, it's pretty much all in my name, Nevada, like the state weird. It's WIER, the rich and famous Peter and Bob were WEIRs, but I'm a WIER.com. But I've had to buy both, so spell it any way you want to. But that's the best way to reach me is my website and blog and even Twitter, it's Nevada Weir. So I love sharing in this format. So I can't thank you enough for providing these podcasts and ways for people like myself to speak out, and then, of course, for listeners. I wish I had had something like this when I was in my 20s.
Well, I hope more people will take advantage of this because this is, you and other of these photographers really have given us a wealth of information. And again, thank you for your time, Nevada, and we'll hopefully chat again sometime.
Oh, I hope so. I want to debate this film versus digital sometime with you.
Okay, we'll put it on the calendar.
Okay, great. Okay, great, Matt.
You've been listening to an interview I did with Nevada Weir. I hope you found it enjoyable as well as helpful. Be sure to check out all the other interviews in this series called Depth of Field right here on thedigitaltrekker.com. I'm Matt Brandon.